This episode of Walter Edgar's Journal is an encore of a previously broadcast program.
Welcome to Walter Edgar's Journal. With me in the SCANA studio today are Tom Flowers, who is Professor Emeritus of Art at Furman, his son Mark Elliott Flowers, a former student of mine, spent his career teaching and painting, most recently at Mercersburg Academy in Pennsylvania, and his wife, Christy Higby, who is also an artist. And the three of them have come up with a film entitled The Other Brother. And it's an incredible story about Tom Flowers and his older brother, Jesse, both artists, their estrangement, and after Jesse's death, their reconciliation through art. And is that a fair introduction, folks?
Well, you summed it up well.
That's a perfect introduction. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's start off. I guess, Tom, we need to talk about you and Jesse, your growing up, and then how you grew apart. What was the cause of that?
Well, even as a young child, we got along well, except if my brother got mad at me, he'd put me down on the ground and hold me down and tell me what's what. But we grew up in Washington, D.C., when my father was worked for the Postal Service. My brother was always ahead of me in a sense, particularly in junior high school. But we both were involved in art in some ways. And they had art classes. So when it was my turn to take art there in the ninth grade, she said, "Oh, you're Jesse's brother," because he was always doing things and they were put into a case in the hallway. And so the art teacher was very impressed by him. My brother and I did take a class in the community house in that area where we lived, and we paid 25 cents a week to go there for art classes.
And this is before World War II?
Oh, yes, way before. But then during the war, my father got transferred to Fort Belvoir, which was just shortly beyond Mount Vernon. And my mother and father found a house, and it was at that time really in the country. There was a little house next to us, and that was about it, except there was the little church on a corner.
How old were you at this time in World War II?
12 or 13, I was, and my brother was 3 years older. And so we were sent to a high school, Mount Vernon High School, and it was simply a building, and there were no facilities for athletics or anything like that. Although we had a coach that was from South Carolina, and he was really my savior in many ways, but my brother and I asked him to join and play football, which we did, and he was a pretty tough guy, and he was bigger than I was. Then the next thing I knew, he was drafted into the military service, and he selected the Navy. And so that was our separation right there. This was 1943 when he was drafted. Because he turned 18, and in those days, they would have grabbed him off, and he was gone. So we had no contact until he came back. And in the meantime, I had come to Furman University, and I was away from home, got home on occasion or two.
Tom, one thing, students today, everybody has a car. Back in those days, when you went off to college, you might see your parents. When I went to Davidson, I left in the fall, and I didn't see him till Christmas.
Well, that's of course.
You know, I mean, that's just the way it was.
Yeah. Well, I came down with a friend of mine in high school. We both came to Furman because our coach had gone to Furman, and so all he did was call up and say, "I've got some prospects I'm sending to you." And so we hopped a train and rode down the train. We got off at the train in Greenville and walked down the middle of Washington Street. There was no cars on the street at all. And we walked up to the campus, and we got there, and this guy came up and says, "What are you boys doing?" And we told him, and you know, that we came to play football. And he said, "Well, there's a place for you to have a bed down there. Go find one, and you're in." So that was it. This was in August, and hot as could be.
And again, for our listeners out there, the Furman campus was right downtown.
Oh, yes,
in those
right
days.
Downtown, yeah. Yeah.
So. Okay. So, really, when your brother went off to the war and you went off to Furman, y'all didn't see each other for a while.
No, not at all. And when he came back, I saw him for one day, And we went to, you know, Washington, D.C., and just piddled around and went to movies and came home. And that's about the end of it. And the next time was after I got out of the service for a while. And I stayed at home and then went back and got drafted again in the service.
So y'all really, after teenagers, you didn't really see much of each other at all.
No, not at all.
In the film, there is a definite estrangement. Do you think, did he come back with post-traumatic stress?
He had, it took me a long time and then to find that out. And that must have been what happened, because he wouldn't talk about anything that he did. Even in those days when you had to send a V-mail, and he always wrote to my mother every day. And he would draw little drawings at the top of the V-mail. And sometimes they were not whatever he was doing, but the weather and things like that. But just a small little drawing.
But, Dad, also the circumstances that Uncle Jesse was in, he was a Corps medic.
Yes.
And was part of the sort of mopping up of the end of the war in the South Pacific.
Yes.
And I think you even speculated that he probably saw things that, he never talked about, but certainly came back affected by that.
Oh, yes. I'm sure, like you say, he had to clean up, who was left there.
I can't imagine what he saw.
I have no idea either.
I'm writing this letter sitting on a coconut log on the beach, sun going down. I am absorbing all of the beautiful tropical scenery and the surf rolling in from the ocean in a mass of foam. I wish one of you could be out here to enjoy this scenery. Once in a while, loneliness comes over a person, even though he has plenty of friends in the same boat. I keep thinking I am just a kid. I have a lot to learn about fitting into the world. A lot of things to learn about people. I hope time will change me, so by the time I see all of you, I can, have more poise or something. I can't say what I mean, usually ending up with what I write or say, confused, very confused.
He should have had some kind of therapy when he came back from the war, because he was a medic. He went across the field after everybody was shot.
Dad understood him, and Dad had his own problems.
Dad wanted him to talk about all this war stuff, and Jesse didn't. Jesse kept everything inside. Yeah. It's kind of standoffish, I guess. Then he got kind of mad at the world and stuff. But yeah, he was always kind of a happy person. Even when he first went in the military, he was kind of a happy. Because he sent letters, to all of us, and he was friends with everybody. But then when he came back, it was a little different. And he went to work for the post office department, and he hated it. He just walked away one day and never went back. He just didn't like it. He didn't like being indoors. He liked the outdoors. They have all these people there, psychologists or something, there waiting to talk to him. And sometimes I think some of them get over it and some of them don't. When I was in the garden out there picking stuff, he would drop a few little things about what happened or something. And that was in the later years, not probably the last 5 years.
And we forgot about your sisters who were part of this story.
Yes.
You have two sisters, right?
Right. They're younger than I am. Yeah.
Christy, you're the one who kind of put all this together. You're the in-law.
Yes.
So let's talk about how that happened.
She knows more about my brother than I do.
Well, it has always been a curiosity to know who Jesse is. We knew that that Mark had an uncle he never met, that Tom had a brother he was estranged from. We knew that he lived remotely by choice alone, and we knew that he made art.
Where is he living in that in Virginia?
Yes,
he lived. We lived in the house, and he had his. Well, I have to tell you that I joined the pilot officer program in '49, and I was accepted and everything, but I only stayed 4 months, and I washed out. I came home, and I didn't. I was lost. I didn't know what to do, so I went home from Texas, and my brother was still living there, but he was by himself. He had his own little room. And so I was in his way in many respects. I finally got a job, and so I was gone early in the morning. I went to the post office. And he got a job at the post office. But just one day, he didn't want it anymore, and he just walked out. He didn't resign or anything. He came back home and stayed at the house where we all lived.
He came back with a tendency to be reclusive, and the anger was really quick. And when you look at post-traumatic stress symptoms today that we know about, he fit it pretty closely. Yeah. We had no clue at the time what it was. No. But he came back and started to live in the garage and removed himself from the family, probably after Tom came home and felt like he was moving back in. And but that's when the anger started. Yeah. That's when the difficulties started.
I came and I was in the way.
And then you went on and did further study, right?
Well, I got drafted into the Army in the Korean War, and so I didn't get back to Furman until the 50s it finished.
Okay. And then when did you join the Furman faculty?
59.
Folks, we need to pause for a moment and let our listeners know that this is Walter Edgar's Journal, and I'm talking with Tom Flowers, Mark Flowers, and Christy Higby about a film, The Other Brother. Christy, let's get back to how the story developed. Tom mentioned that Jesse had written his mother every day as a soldier, all of these drawings. How did you and Mark decide you were going to tell Jesse's story?
Well, I had come to filmmaking late. I was about age 50 when I first started to get into it and loved it. And so I'm on the lookout all the time for interesting stories, but also for stories that you have access to. And I was looking for a new project. I had just finished Bold Digger and my first short doc. And I was just wide open to new ideas. And I knew that we were always curious about Jesse, but I suddenly started to realize Jesse had passed away in 08, so we never did get to meet him. 04, I'm sorry. It was 2004 that he passed away.
Okay.
But at that time, things started to surface, like his collection of letters that he wrote.
Uh-huh. We were literally just sitting in Aunt Janet's house, and we were talking about Jesse, and she says, oh, by the way, I have his letters. They're in the basement. And I think that was a light bulb that went off.
Yeah, because we didn't know how we were really going to understand who Jesse was. Tom didn't have a lot to share with us at the time. It was kind of locked inside. And so we had these letters written by his hand, and there was 2,700 letters.
Wow.
From 1944 until the day before he died. I found that letter. And they kept every one. But
the day before he died, who was he writing to? His sisters?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Even though they lived nearby, right?
They were an hour away.
Okay. So he was corresponding with first his mother and then his sisters.
Yes.
Well, for as long as I can remember, I would get letters in the mail, and we'd always know because he decorated the envelope as well. I was receiving them as I was still a child. It started with, I guess, when he was in the Navy. I expect every week we would at least get one. He would tell what was happening because one letter could cover several days. He wrote to me, wrote to my mother. I saved all mine, and I guess Janet saved the ones he wrote to my mother. Of course, I read them at one point, and sometimes several times, because when I answered a letter, I'd like to pick out a comment or two about whatever had happened. I would look forward to them. And I always think the mailman must have wondered at some of the pictures that were on the envelopes.
Well, you have to understand that mother's brother was the one that got him away from home. He used to go down to the country near Fredericksburg and had a little cabin or building. And he wanted my brother to come down and take care of it and would be a place to live and so on. But he was a introvert in that respect, but my uncle got him to come down there, and that was really the end of him in the sense that he was there and looked after things, and he had to live on his own. He had no money, income. He finally started cutting firewood, and he was a recluse, and he just lived by himself there and for years.
But he was writing, corresponding with the family.
Yes, so I knew that we had these first account letters, and they were long letters. They were 4 pages long, front to back, top to bottom, and they were often. And in the end, I realized that was his family. That was who he talked to at the end of the day about his day, because it was full of detail.
So this is almost a journal then. His letters are almost.
You know, he kept a journal also.
Oh, okay.
He kept a journal also. And that was very different from his letters. And his letters to his sister were very different from his letters to his mom.
Okay, now this is getting curiouser and curiouser, as they say. First of all, as someone who spent a lot of time in primary material, when you start talking about you've got 2,700 letters and they're 4 and 5 pages, all handwritten, and then you've got a journal and you start comparing the letters, different letters to mother and sister, and the journal's different. Have you got three different personalities here?
You have three different ways of sharing his thoughts. His mom's were, that was pretty much about the weather and what he did in this enormous garden he kept his whole life. That took up the bulk of his time and work. But when he wrote his sisters, he would say that. Same thing. And then he would, at a certain place in the letters, I started to understand if he was going to share something about what he saw or thought or read, it was going to be there. And so I could, there was sort of a system to his letter writing that allowed me to not read every word.
Letter to mom, and then in essence it was repeating 2 or 3 paragraphs.
Yes.
And then he'd start writing his sister about something else.
Yes, yes. He shared his heart and his thoughts with his sister.
That's the youngest sister,
Yes.
Jean.
Yes.
And what about the journal?
The journals, he did keep almost every day he wrote in them. That's what Janet, the older sister, told me. Yeah. We found one. Janet went in after he passed away and burned every one of them. She said, nobody needs to see this.
Ooh. So what exists in the journal? I mean, did she ever say why she did that?
She just, she thought it was, I think he got very dark in his thoughts, and I think he got very sexual in his thoughts. In his journals, he saved that for himself, though he didn't share those with anybody that I know of. But in the one that he survived, he did get much more candid about. He was very down on himself. There was a lot of self-hate, and it was sad to learn that about him. Although, you will also see a very sensitive side to people and animals and ideas and movies and books would move him.
And the radio.
A lot. And the radio, yeah. He lived by the radio.
And also, since all three of you are artists, what about his art? Who had his art?
His art was, in the end, I came to think of it like the Navajos who don't have a word for creativity because it's so much part of their life. I thought of Jesse as being extremely inner-directed about making art. He just had to do it, and he did it. And when it was done, it wasn't even a product to him. He would just toss it on the floor. He didn't take care of it in a way that you would expect him to. And he never wrote about it. He very seldom wrote about it in all those letters.
I don't know, unless it was just kind of a release from his daily chores. That's what did for pleasure or relaxation, was to draw and paint and on anything, any piece of cardboard or whatever he had. And then he would stack it up on his table and it would get stained and dirty and dusty from his wood stove.
Gosh.
And he would give it to you if you wanted it.
Yeah.
And he liked to show it off. And I was surprised he did some drawings for his neighbors and gave it to them.
So how much of it survived?
It would be hard to measure that. There's a good bit that the sisters would collect and take home with them. He gave it away a lot.
Always on paper. Drawings,
scraps,
and scrap paper.
Manila folders, advertisements, and anything that had a blank spot on it. He would start drawing.
And a lot of hand carvings of scrap wood.
Who has his art?
I have it right now, and it belongs to the sisters.
Now, how old are Mark's aunts?
Oh, what are they now?
80. Betty Jean turned 80, and Janet is 83.
And so they got his art and his letters, correct?
Yes.
But they share what they have with you to do this film.
They did. Incredibly generous. And to go back to your first question, that as a filmmaker, what interested me? Well, the story and my innate curiosity about who Jesse was. So there was the art, which I had, of course, an interest in too, seeing more, knowing more about it. And there was the letters that told me about Jesse. But then at some point, Jean, her husband Raymond, is legally blind, and he would take a video camera everywhere they went on trips to videotape, come back, put it on a large screen TV so he could see where he was and what he saw a little more clearly. And then he said, yeah, we took it to Jesse's house, too, when he visited him. And so when I knew there was video footage of Jesse, that just was very exciting to know.
I've seen your film. Yeah. In fact, that's why you're here. not just because Mark was my former student and we kept in touch, but because I saw the film and I was absolutely intrigued. And I don't want to read too much into it, but the videos of Jesse indicate that something was wrong. Just the way he interacted, even with his sister, whom he cared for. I mean, it comes across in the film. Is that fair? Or?
That's very fair. And there are things that now, of course, you don't want to diagnose from a distance, but some of his personal reflections in his letters about himself and about being lonely, wanting to be with people, but every time he's in a crowd, he has to leave because he feels like he doesn't belong. And so there were a lot of things about his personality that shared that sounded like he'd be on the Asperger's.
Tom, when y'all were growing up, Two boys growing up, two teenagers. I mean, did you see any of this before he went off to the war?
No, we were both sort of introverts in many ways, although I was a little bit more aggressive than he was. He read a lot, and we both made drawings.
Yeah, but you both played football, and he came back different. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yes. But he's also a product of education and opportunity interrupted. He had everything at his fingertips in middle school and elementary school. He had straight A's. He was accomplished in art. He was experiencing great success. And then the family removed him from that and put him in a very sterile environment with no stimulation. And that affected him. He quit school.
Oh, he did? Mm-hmm. Before he got drafted, he quit school. Okay.
And I really think he was bored. Because probably. After reading all his letters, he's obviously a sensitive, intelligent person. But I think at a moment in his life where he needed to be stimulated, pushed, he saw nothing happening and became bored. I really think he became bored in high school. From the environment.
Well, we moved from a very good program in Washington, D.C. I mean, our teachers were very – we did so many things in the school. That's how he got in terms of art, the teacher there, that she praised him and gave him indications of things to do. The same with me. But and then we worked a little bit together like that at the community house. It was a real contact there, the two of us.
But you're right to question what caused the estrangement, and that was a big question going into this film, and we were a little afraid of what we might find out because it could be anything, but we were also very curious, and in the end, it didn't matter. In the end, it was much more complicated than one incident.
Well, yeah. at one point, now Mark, you never actually met your uncle.
No, never did.
Although your dad tried to.
Well, that I have almost no memory of because I couldn't have been more than five when you took the whole family up to see him. I guess it was on the way back from grandmother's house in D.C. or something. And according to Dad, he shot a gun up in the air to warn us off. Mm-hmm. And I have no memory of it.
Okay. It wasn't that he didn't warn us, but he didn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
And because he did that to me when I had moved back after the service. So
I found the letter that he wrote the next morning after that evening. And I thought that was going to, reveal something really specific. But it really didn't. It revealed the fact that he could not let Tom visit and he could not explain why. But he was very firm
to
communicate that.
He was ashamed of where he lived, yes.
Well, it certainly could be that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His younger brother's coming there to bring his family. Does he mention, other than Tom, did he mention the fact that he didn't get to see his niece and nephew?
No. He simply said, I don't know who put him up to this, and if it was you, speaking to his mom, you need to tell him to never do it again. I will always respond this way, was the gist of the letter. And because he wasn't worthy, because he felt like he didn't Well, he didn't use the word deserve, but I got the impression that he just didn't have any self-worth.
July 14th, 1961. I don't know if he'd done it on his own or you up there asked him, but he came here this afternoon. It caught me off guard being in dumps, feeling blue. Be best if he read this, for he should never, never harbor any guilty feelings of what occurred before coming down here. I alone am guilty. Take full blame. I should be the one who must come forward and make amends of my stupid behavior and will at the time I am ready. What and where he has done and has lived, I know little and have no desire to know of. He has made his peace in the world, where I still try to hide from it. I had the feelings numbed, trying to live down here with that setback in mind, trying almost to forget it, but knowing I never could. Please, I beg of you, advise him not to do it again. I just wish to be left alone. I have turned over both sides in what happened many times, probably too much, so wish to be left out of the family. You three have been far too good, more than I deserved, giving me help when I asked for it. I wish to God he had never come up here. Go his way, live his own life, forget that I exist. May come to pass, I shall disappear anyway. It is a sad thing to happen on Easter Sunday. A wall must exist between, and only I can knock it down. Can't say it has been a happy Easter for me, but hope it has been a good one up there. Good night, and God bless all of you.
Is there any correspondence from his mother or sisters back to him that you've had access to?
No.
So you don't know how his mother reacted to getting this letter. Tom, did your mother ever tell you after this happened, did she say, don't go back, or?
No.
But she was very loyal to Jesse. She visited him weekly, brought him food and staples.
She visited Jesse every week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And she, you know, and obviously she died before he did. His sisters then took over.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that he lets the women in the family. What about your dad? Did your dad have any contact with him?
My dad's another story, kind of, but he thought I'd never make anything of myself. And he wasn't very complimentary. But
well, you were an artist. Well, I mean, come on, Tom. You know, a Southern boy growing up, and you tell Dad, I'm going to be an artist. Now, when Mark came along, we knew he wasn't going to be a historian.
But yeah, we proved that in your class, Walter. I'm afraid we made that very clear my freshman year.
But I knew he was going to be an artist if he didn't, because he wrote the most beautiful exams in purple ink. Didn't say a darn thing, but he wrote the most just beautifully lettered. I mean, seriously. I don't think you put any drawings there, but I should have one. Yeah, but some of the our correspondence later on, I think there was one where you would just do a little drawing.
Probably.
That's how I finished or passed biology, because I did good drawings.
Okay, let's get back to the filmmaking. And Mark, what's your role in all that? I mean, this is Christie's project. You're listed as the producer.
You know, basically, I'm the promoter. It seems like I was in charge of all the social media around the film and reaching out and writing letters to even you and letting you know about the film. And so my role has been support staff.
Well, let's just talk about you and Christie and your careers. You spent the last couple of decades at Mercersburg Academy. Great South Carolina connection there with
Archibald Rutledge.
Archibald Rutledge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Before that, you were in Savannah.
Yes, we lived in Bluffton, and I commuted and taught at Savannah College of Art and Design. And actually, previous before that, we both taught at Sea Pines Academy, which is now Hilton Head Prep on Hilton Head Island.
Okay. So where'd y'all meet?
Oh, we met in undergraduate school at University of South Carolina. We were both art majors.
Okay. And who did you work with in the art department?
John O'Neill, Harry Hansen, okay. All those guys. And actually, I was a work-study student, and Christy was working through college as a secretary to John O'Neill, and I had to turn my time cards in to Christy to get paid, and, you know, all of a sudden, the sort of level of importance became... And then, actually, it was neat, because I used to... part of the job was to run artwork around the Southeast in the school step van, and Christy didn't have a car, and I think one day she said, you know, could I go? And I went, sure. You know, and the rest is history, I guess.
But I do remember being told there's a new work study student. He's an art major, and his name is Flowers. And I said, you're kidding. An art major named Flowers.
But my understanding was that he was in the streaker business in those days.
Well, we can move on from the Marching 900. Yeah, I'm still a proud member of the Marching 900, spring of 1974, but okay, that has nothing to do with it.
Well, but that's part of USC lore just as much as the...
Well, it is. It is. You know, I'm proud to be a member of that.
The ball on the Maxie Monument. Yeah. Folks, we need to pause for a moment and let our listeners know that this is Walter Edgar's Journal, and I'm talking with Tom Flowers, Mark Flowers, and Christy Higbee about a film, The Other Brother. Let's move now to Jesse's art. You've used it in the advertising, and you said, you know, he did it on scraps, and I guess we would, some of the art folks say, oh, it's folk art. But is it? Or,
no. Well, it really comes under outsider art more than anything, which is done by someone who's a recluse and usually has mental difficulties also. And
to use the term outsider art.
That's right.
Okay.
And folk art is a little bit more about celebrating community culture and religion. It all comes under this untrained umbrella, people who are not formally trained in art.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about if you look at particularly rural African American culture, you'll have folks who did painting. I don't want to say visionary, but a lot of religious orientation, all untrained, particularly in Mississippi and Georgia. There's some well known folks, but I just was trying to get a term to describe to our listeners. So use the term outsider art.
Outsider art is the closest that I've read about, and visionary art is another term, and that's usually imagery about heaven and hell, and specifically to religion.
Okay, so that doesn't fit into to
no,
Jesse's art.
No, he you know, it's both.
It's almost like
light.
A verbal thing as well, you know, his art. Because they always had the things that he put on the envelopes. He always had a drawing on an envelope of some kind. And in one of his letters, he mentions the fact, he says, I wonder what the postman thinks about all these things in there.
So we should mention that every one of those 2,700 letters has an original drawing on them.
On an envelope, yes. Yeah.
Describe it.
Well, he had a fascination with kind of morphing animals and humans.
Well, I think one of the first things that maybe you were in contact with were all self-portraits.
Right, and the more art I saw, the more I wanted to see. They're really amazingly original and distinct.
Are they just pen and ink, or are they color?
He only had very inexpensive markers for color, and he drew with pens a lot. The color is pretty garish and intense, and that was just by default that he couldn't afford good supplies. They're very illustrative and sometimes very dark and erotic.
In the package materials that Mark sent out, there's what I'd call a landscape.
You may have seen Tom's work, because we...
You put both in there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. There was a set of drawings and paintings from both of them in those postcards. And so the landscapes, Jesse photographed landscapes a lot, but he didn't paint them or draw them. But the way that he photographed them, the way he had the horizon line and the light... was very much like Tom's landscapes. And when I started to see that connection and the connection of line, which is very similar.
I got to stop right now as historian. You didn't mention that you also had a cache of photographs to look at in addition to the letters and the journals and the videos. I mean, you're talking about a documentary treasure trove here.
Yes. Oh, everything was there that I needed at my fingertips. The only thing missing was Jesse's actual voice. And I was able to find someone who did a pretty nice representation for me in the film of reading his letters. But yeah, that it was a treasure trove. And my project folder has 7,000 files in it between scanning letters, scanning the artwork for both artists. And
that's really, to me, the glue of the film is the relationship between Jesse's work, his letters, which really were artistic in themselves. And then you've got Dad's sketchbooks that he keeps a prolific amount of activity going on there. So you've got those two activities from the two brothers separate from each other, but yet the film brings them together and shows that there were so many similarities, yet they never talked to each other.
Well, you start mentioning line and light, Christy, in comparing Tom's work and Jesse's work. So these aren't kids separated at birth, but, you know, as young men, and yet their artistic eye seems to have connections.
Yeah, yeah. Nature, nurture, I don't know, but it is uncanny. And content, too. And the networks of shapes and lines when they're just sort of doodling or sketching thoughtlessly in a sketchbook or, in Jesse's case, you know, scrap paper, it was startling. But then again, I had so much that it wasn't hard to find those connections. Could it be partly culture? Possibly. There was a lot of holiday cards and holiday imagery that they would do similar. So it's hard to know what was genetic, what was...
Well, the one thing that strikes me from Tom's description of growing up is when they were young teens, middle school age, they had obviously an incredible art teacher there in Washington who cared about her students. And
well, all the teachers there were exceptional people. I mean, I got involved in little bits of drama. I was in a choir. I mean, I can't sing, but we did all sorts of things in the junior high school. It was what they call a middle school nowadays.
But even in the, you know, looking at the family photographs and of you two growing up, you're the kid that's exclaiming. You're the kid that is full of expression. And Jesse's always not making those kind of gestures. And you know, you bring up the play. I mean, that was part of your being outward. You had lots of friends, whereas Jesse was much more introspect and read more and stayed by himself more. But yet, when you two went off to military service and Jesse came back... you know, I think you were still outgoing and he was even more introspective and less outgoing.
All right, let's get to the film now. You produced a wonderful film.
Thank you.
How do people get to see it?
Well, you know, I'm coming to this as a visual artist, and so I treat it very much like that. That's what I know from my background. And you create the work, and then you find a place to share it. But that's not necessarily the route for filmmaking. And so when the film is finished and you're as independent as I am, which is 100% all me in the studio, because you can these days, then you need to find venues. And so the best thing is film festivals. That's a good sounding board for it. You get feedback if it's accepted. It's very difficult to get into a lot of them. And we were lucky to get into two in the middle of this year. And we're hoping to hear from several others. That's one way. Another way is, we'd like to make it available for sale, too. And we're looking for an online distributor. That's probably our next challenge.
Which two film festivals have you been accepted to?
One was the Santa Fe Film Festival.
Okay. That's a biggie.
That was a really nice one to be accepted into. And the programmer that we met, who programmed the whole thing, he was the only person that looked at the films and accepted them, really enjoyed the other brother and championed it into existence there, which was nice. We went there and had a small but dedicated older audience that was interested in the whole history that was presented. But I don't know that they were there for the art as much as the story of two brothers that started in a time that they would remember, that was an older audience. And so, but a really, really interesting Q&A at the end.
And I like the way you describe this as art, film as art. Has there been any discussion that maybe, let's just say, the Upcountry Museum in Greenville displaying Tom and Jesse's and Mark's art and the film and then having some kind of program?
Well, I think that's a venue that we would like to explore. Not necessarily my art involved in it, because I'm not sure it's a real part of the story, but I really think a wonderful exhibit could be Dad's work over the years and Jesse's work, and what the film does is put them together and sees the similarities. I think to see the live work in some sort of display would be amazing, and that's certainly a venture. It is being shown this fall at the Intuit Museum in Chicago. We're hoping maybe something might come out of that, and I think that's the next stage of this journey that we've been on, is to find a place for Jesse's, especially Jesse's work, because we have given a voice to someone who had no voice at all.
Well, now, how do your aunts feel about that?
Oh, they're thrilled. I mean, they were so generous, and they basically turned the whole thing over to us and said, let's do something. You know, I think they recognize the value and you know, how things stay within the family, but I think through this film they've understood that there's a larger venue.
And the difficulty for the sisters was they were there for him his whole life, but they really didn't have the finances or the knowledge of how to help him pass that. They were stuck by him. They made sure he had what he needed in the way of staples that he couldn't grow on his own, and they visited him. But past that, they didn't know how to help him, and he could have used a lot of help, therapy and a lot of intervention, but that was beyond them. So when they watched the film, they were very grateful that people really knew who he was. They knew his heart and soul, not just the fact that he was reclusive and difficult. And they showed their appreciation the last time we met, and it felt great.
That's actually, Christy, that's very heartwarming, because I say, watching the film, I knew Mark, I knew Tom. It was quite clear Jesse was different, but it's not presented in an offensive, but it's clear that he's a very different person. And I was concerned, perhaps, that the sisters being so close, that might have, they might not have liked that.
This would not have happened unless they gave the green light.
Yeah. And I did worry about that, too. Because there is some information in the film that might, some families might see embarrassing, but in the end, there's more good news.
And to answer your other question, you know, you can contact us through our website, mountainteastudios.com.
We will have that link on Walter Edgar's Journal's website so that people can know about that.
While we're on the subject of sharing sort of the fallout, which in our case, I think the experience, and Tom can speak to this, but I think it was cathartic for all of us, very specifically for him, but very, very definitely for our relationship, too. The film shares a lot about his difficult upbringing, and I think we are just all more enlightened about how that impacts a family.
Yeah. Well, Tom, you indicated you did have a difficult relationship with your dad. Jesse?
Did Jesse?
Yeah.
I can't think of anything in that way. I mean, I'm being a little bit more aggressive, but more than I had to grow out of a lot of things. But I was the one that got the spankings with my dad's belt more than he did. But my father drank a lot. You could say he was an alcoholic, but He wasn't the greatest father in the world, and neither was my mother necessarily, although I'm not against them, either one of them. I mean, because they were my father and mother, and my mother had her own way, and my father had his own way.
How was this film cathartic for you? Christy said that this was a catharsis for everybody in the family, the sisters, you.
Maybe I can share something that will help set up Tom's answer to that question. One of the approaches I took in the film was to look through all of the photographs growing up when they were young and put them in a certain order and then interview the sisters just like you would be sitting with the family album. Only they were on the computer flipping through, commenting on them. And so I took that exact same set of photographs and put them in front of Tom and recorded him responding to them in the same order. What I didn't completely realize that he had never seen most of these pictures, or they had never seen a whole body of them. But then I had all the pictures of Jesse growing, you know, as a young man, middle age and older, that he had never seen. And so he was learning about the entirety of Jesse's life just in that one hour session of looking through the photographs. And he was very forthright and very sharing and very honest in his responses to what he saw, which was a life he never knew really existed in that kind of detail. And if I can share this, and you can let us know if you don't want to include this, but I loved the way the whole session was going. I loved what he was sharing. And the photographs ended. I turned the camera off, and Tom broke down emotionally. And I had no clue that it was coming. I didn't realize what I had just done. That was a moment.
Well, it's like I said, she knows more about my brother than I do, because she's read all the 2,600 pages of the letters, and I've just went through the. She's provided me with segments and dates of statements of letters that he had written. I have a portfolio of that Christy typed out and gave me, and I just finished reading a couple of the stories last weekend.
So I think in the end, we talk a lot about Jesse now, and we never talked about him.
Well it's not that I didn't think about
That's
him.
Growth.
It's you know, I just felt a void there. I had no way of contacting and interacting with him at all my whole life. And if I tried, even before, when I was in between things at home, I didn't get anywhere either.
What's so powerful about this film is it's a story of two artists that were brothers that went off into two different directions and produced work that you can find similarities. But what it really is our family story. And we've discovered things. My aunts provided us with a treasure box of clues and knowledge of a family, and through the film, and I'm so proud of Christy for doing this, is that she's told a story about a family that started out before the Depression, survived the Depression, dealt with family issues, the story of an entire family dealing with life, and it's just a great story at that level. But then to add on the fact that two artists were making artwork. Your dual lives. You went off to become a professor, swam in the educational world, and had shows. Jesse sat on a farm and worked all his life with his hands, and at night would draw. And this film brings those two lives together.
Okay, Mark, son and nephew. Does your dad have a cache of letters? I know he's got a tremendous cache of art. Does he have a cache of letters, thinking about what you might pass down to your children?
It's his sketchbooks. In his sketchbooks are, you know, he keeps them like journals, and there are events and things throughout his life that once Dad passes on, I'll spend a lot of time.
So what are you doing for your children? What kind of record are you keeping?
I think that's called Facebook now. that's an interesting question that all of a sudden I feel not worthy.
Well, and I would see, this is what historians of the future are going to have to deal with. I mean, just the mention of that treasure, 2,700 letters from one individual. Now, what the aunt did with the journal, by the way, is not unusual. She burned the journals. My late mother-in-law died, and one of the things she wanted was the letters that she and my late father-in-law had shared during World War II. She wanted them destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She wanted them destroyed. So that was really difficult. My daughters and my two sisters-in-law had to deal with that. So
yeah, do they respect the request, or do they?
They did.
Yeah.
They did. They did.
But yeah, that is the modern dilemma.
And there's some question about exposing someone without their permission. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly didn't have Jesse's permission to do this. I had to guess whether he would have supported this or not. And the few things that he said about his art and wondering what the people think that see it told me that he probably wouldn't mind sharing his art in the end. But whether he would have minded sharing his letters, I don't know. That was a risk, of course.
But it's an incredible story, and I really think a beautiful story. I really do. And it's beautifully told.
Thank you.
I do it with words. You've done it with film, but it's based upon that incredible treasure trove of family history. And I'd like to keep talking forever, but Alfred has given me the wind-up sign three different times. And so I think we're going to have to close down today's session with Tom Flowers, Christy Higby, and Mark Flowers talking about their family and a wonderfully done film, The Other Brother. Thanks for being with us today on The Journal.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
This is Walter Edgar, and I know I always say I hope you enjoyed today's journal. I do, but I don't think enjoy is the right term to use today. This was quite an amazing story, a very poignant story for all concerned, especially for Tom Flowers, estranged from his brother, Jesse, really when they were teenagers. But through Jesse's art and the cooperation of his sisters, Jesse was really rediscovered, and Tom and his children became reconciled with an uncle they never knew. It's quite a story about the importance of art. And as a historian, I can't help but mention it's also about what treasures people have in terms of family records that they save and pass on to another generation. This is Walter Edgar. Join me next week for more of The Journal.
Walter Edgar's Journal is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer and engineer is Alfred Turner. Production of this program is made possible in part by listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina.
The views and opinions expressed on Walter Edgar's Journal are not necessarily those of South Carolina ETV Radio.